I'm Peggy Pirro, and this is Food From Here. Brought to you by Swirka and More, hosting a Veterans Day celebration on Friday, November 1st, featuring a catered lunch and a musical performance by members of the Evansville Philharmonic. This event is free for veterans and one guest. Additional guests are $8 each. Reservation deadline is October 25th. Details available online at swirka.org on the special events page. Kelsey Gerhardt comes from a family of beekeepers, and she's the owner of Fields of Gold, a wholesale honey company in Vandenberg County. She serves on the board of directors for Beekeepers of Indiana and occasionally writes for the American Bee Journal. She's a certified honey judge with the American Honey Show Training Council and a certified honey sommelier. Kelsey and I covered a lot of ground when we talked in September, from the ecology of beehives and honeybee communities to how she collects a swarm of honeybees from a nervous homeowner, to her work as a honey judge, and her one key tip on the best way to know if the honey you buy is the real thing. I got a lot out of this conversation, and I hope you will too. Later in the episode, I'll have some tips for using honey in your kitchen. As always, if you have comments or questions on this or any episode of Food From Here, you can send an email to foodfromhere@wnin.org. I read every one of them, and I appreciate your thoughts. Now, here's my conversation with beekeeper Kelsey Gerhardt. Kelsey.
Yes.
Welcome to Food From Here.
Thanks.
Many of us grow up with kind of an ambivalent relationship with bees, right? We know or we learn that they're important, but they make us uneasy. Me personally, I was afraid of bees from a very young age. My mom says it's because I got a bee in my diaper.
Oh.
I was an infant. I don't know. Your relationship with bees is a little atypical then.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you're a fourth generation beekeeper. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you could start by telling me a little bit about growing up with bees in your life. And then maybe we could talk about how this craft has grown and changed for
sure.
You and your family over
yeah.
the generations.
My great-grandpa came to America from Germany, and he worked in a hardware store near Tell City. And then they used to get nuts, bolts, screws, and everything at the hardware store in big wooden boxes
right. That
were about the same size of the beehives that you see today. And so he went out and found a wild bee tree, as they're called, where wild bees are living inside trees, and cut it down, moved it into some of those wooden boxes at his house that he'd taken home, and started keeping bees, teaching himself. And he taught my grandpa. My grandpa taught my mom. And my grandpa's in his late 80s, and he still helps me today.
That's pretty bold to go out and find a hive and just say, I'm going to take you home.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get around to talking about how you move a swarm uh-huh. later in our conversation. But yeah, the boldness of that just says, I'm going to repurpose these bees and bring them into my life.
The times were very different then.
Yeah, I guess so. So is there a difference between the beehives you find in the wild and domestic bees, wild bees? Is there a difference?
Not a lot. As long as you're sure that they're honeybees and not yellow jackets or hornets or something like that. As a beekeeper, we get a lot of calls. Hey, I have this bee coming out of the concrete in my wall. What is this? Odds are it's not a honeybee. It's something, some other type of flying thing. And if it's another flying thing, I don't want anything to do with it either.
I hear that.
But wild honeybees that do swarm, I can go capture those and bring them home to my hives. And they make honey, just the same honey that bees that I've purchased from a breeder or a bigger producer. They're very similar.
Okay. So bees come, the bees that we use in domestic beekeeping, they can come from a bee.
Breeder.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, just like you would get a dog or a cat. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there a lot of these, or is it a very niche industry?
There are a lot of big ones that farm them out, for lack of a better term, that you can buy from a company that buys from these breeders.
Okay, got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're just the distribution network.
Yeah. And there are different breeds of honeybee, like Italians or Carnolians or...
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Talk,
about that a little bit.
They're just a little bit different. Some are meaner than other ones, okay. Some beekeepers think, and some produce more honey. Usually there's kind of an adage that the meaner the bees are, the more honey they produce, and the nicer the bees are, they're docile, but they don't produce as much honey. And so I haven't necessarily noticed that. I have 19 hives, and I take what I can get. I collect swarms, so I don't care necessarily about what bees I have. I like to diversify and have a lot of different kinds because I think that just keeps the interbreeding healthy between your bees.
So do the bees care if they're all the same breed?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. No, I haven't asked them, but no, I don't think so.
Can you tell by looking whether a bee is from one breed or another?
You can, but I don't remember how.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, but at a glance,
no.
A honeybee would be a honeybee.
Yes.
So you mentioned that people call you about bees that they might want removed. If somebody calls you and they happen to actually have a swarm of honeybees, mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
I suit up. I put my beekeeping suit on. I make sure I have my suit completely closed because bees sting. You know, I know.
Diaper.
I get people.
I'm telling you.
Exactly. I get people saying, hey, I saw this girl on YouTube or Facebook Reels or whatever that has, she doesn't ever wear a suit. Why do you wear a suit? I don't like being stung. And so I just keep my suit with me at all times. It's always in my car in case I get a swarm call, which is what they're called. And I suit up. I make sure I have an empty, it's called a nuke box, and it's basically like a small hive that's enclosed.
And you see nuke?
In UC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Short for nucleus.
Yes.
And so I go and I take that nuke box with me. And the front of this is a special swarm collecting nuke box for me. And it's completely closed so they can't fly out in my car when I take them home.
Yeah.
And I look for the queen in this ball of bees that, let's say, it's hanging above your kid's playset.
Yeah.
At home. I get that call a lot. Hey, we don't want these bees singing my kids, whatever. So in the middle of this ball of bees, usually, is the queen bee. She releases special pheromones that attract honeybees from her hive to her. And once you find that queen bee, it's so cool. You can put her inside that nuke box, and the bees will march right in, and they make a little line following her scent. It may take a little while, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour, but usually not long enough that you have to leave and come back. Sometimes that happens, but they'll just come in the hive. That's the most perfect situation.
Right.
Sometimes they're way high up and you get a ladder and you have to shake it into the box and hope and pray that you have the queen. And yeah.
You're talking about these swarms as kind of a ball of bees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How big is it? Like the size of a grapefruit or
I've seen some
watermelon?
The size of a grapefruit. Some that are the size of like two watermelons.
Oh,
huge pounds of bees.
And you have to somehow make your way to the center to find that queen?
Ideally, she's at the center, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of nudge the bees out of the way?
So the cool thing is, before they leave the hive, usually they swarm because they're overcrowded in the spring. So before they leave the hive, they will gorge themselves on honey, eat as much honey as they possibly can, and then they're kind of calm, complacent. You know, if we go eat at a buffet, all we want to do afterwards is nap.
Right.
So that's the idea. And then they follow her. They're doing that to make sure they have enough energy resources to go off and find another home. And once they find her, they kind of settle there. And they're not going to make their home necessarily on the end of that branch, but they will then, they're using it as a resting spot. Then they will probably fly off somewhere else and make a home. Maybe in the opening of a tree, like a tree hollow, an old hollowed out tree, or hopefully not your siding, but I've had those calls too.
Does she initiate this move if the hive is, as you said, crowded? Does the queen say, come on, guys, we're going to find a new place to live? Or how does that work?
Yeah, she kind of sends a signal to all of the other bees that, hey, it's time to scoot on out.
Okay.
Let's go.
And they leave that space altogether, sort of like a crab shedding its too small shell?
No. Part of the bees will stay behind and create a new queen.
All right. And how does that work?
So she has kind of signaled to a couple nurse bees that, hey, we're going to move on. Okay. And so the nurse bees start to feed a couple of baby bees, maybe 5 to 7 baby bees, special food called royal jelly. And this royal jelly, you might have seen it on the shelf at a drugstore. It's used in different face creams and stuff like that to help renew youth. It's kind of a claim, whatever. But special royal jelly is fed to these nurse bees. The baby bees. And then the babies can grow up to produce an ovipositor, which is how the queen is the only bee that lays eggs. And then these other queens hatch and sometimes will fight her to the death. Until there's one left behind, and then this other one flies off with the other half or third of the bees, two-thirds of the bees, takes some of them with her.
Okay.
And then the one that's left behind keeps on going like normal.
So these nurse bees, are they female bees themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
And their purpose is to kind of be nursemaids to the bees in waiting, the ladies in waiting, so to speak.
Or absolutely.
The females in waiting. What happens to these female bees if there is no need for them as a new queen?
Oh, they're still helping with the other nurse, or I'm sorry, the other baby bees that are left behind in the hive.
Okay.
They're still helping, cleaning out cells, making sure that there are clean cells for these babies to grow into. And
yeah, there's a lot of work to be done.
There is,
in
a hive. There's 60 to 100,000 bees in a beehive, in a honey beehive.
60,000 to 100,000 bees in a single hive.
Yes.
And this is what you have with your hives?
Mm-hmm. Yep. In each of my hives has about this amount in them.
Okay. How much do that 60,000 bees weigh?
Oh, man. I don't... A lot.
Yeah?
Especially in the height of summer right now. Maybe late August. My beehives are so heavy.
Yeah.
Hundreds of pounds.
Wow.
Full of honey.
I had no idea.
And bees.
And bees. So... Of the 60,000 to 100,000 bees that are in a particular hive, how many of them are in the hive box at any given time? Because clearly some are out and about and gathering, you know, nectar and so forth. So is it maybe half as many, or do they all come home in the evening and take a nap and start again in the morning?
That's a good question. They do come home at night and sleep, hang out inside the hive. And during the day, a good portion of them go out and they're forager bees looking for a place to get pollen and nectar from to help sustain the hive.
Yeah, pollen and nectar, two different things.
Yes, right. Pollen serves as the protein source for the bees, just like we need protein. And honey serves as the carbohydrate. And there's another substance inside called bee bread that we don't really harvest a whole lot. Some beekeepers do. And the bee bread is nectar and honey and pollen and special enzymes from the bee's stomach that they mix together. And that is a super healthy substance that the bees can eat on.
And do they deposit that somewhere in the hive in the cells, or do they just hold it?
Yeah, it's deposited in the cells too. Mm-hmm. So is the royal jelly and the honey, and everything's held in these little cells as like a holding space.
You know, when I was doing the research for our conversation, I came upon the notion of mail order queens, which I thought was kind of amusing. But, you know, you've addressed the whole idea that there are bee breeders and so forth. So there are queen breeders as well, and you can order a queen.
You can.
How successful is that, to order a queen from elsewhere and introduce it to a new population of bees?
It's pretty successful, actually. I've never had a queen bee get turned down, essentially, for her position. But Indiana actually has one of the leading queen breeders associations in the nation. It's called the IQBA, the Indiana Queen Breeders Association. And there's a lot of great men and women that have done some research on how to make the most genetically proficient queens. And so you can actually send someone on this special list that you find online an email and say, hey, I need 5 queen bees, or however many hives you need to get new queens for. And they ship them to you. Each one comes in a little box, and inside this little box has 5 nurse bees in there with the queen. And there is a little plug that's made of sugar and another little cork plug that's on top of the sugar. And so you take this whole box and you put it down inside your beehive. You make sure, double check that there is not another queen already in your hive, because it could cause them to swarm or try to kill her, the queen. Take the cork plug out, and the queen bee in maybe 3 to 5 days will eat through that sugar plug. And by then, the other bees are used to her scent. And they accept that pheromone.
Fascinating.
It is. My kids love it because I get these queen bees in the mail from my friends that are part of the IQBA. And they'll get to have them on the kitchen table while we're eating dinner until I get the chance to put them in my beehives so they can just watch them crawl inside these safe little boxes.
So is it a box that you can see into?
You can, yeah. Okay. It's like a little wooden, bigger than a matchbox, but okay. Maybe only 3 inches long.
Okay.
And there's screen on both sides of it so that they can smell the pheromone outside, but she can't get through there.
Because I was picturing a jewelry box, you know, which you'd have a bracelet in or something.
Not but it's that not special. Like that. No.
Well, I don't know. She sounds pretty special to me. So why would somebody need a queen?
In case your queen dies or doesn't make it through the winter and you still have living bees inside your hive, you can add another queen. Sometimes your queen is getting sick and old and she doesn't lay eggs in a perfect pattern anymore. Okay. And we know then that, hey, we need to kill this queen and add a new queen in.
So you watch for those things. You examine your hives and you watch for those signs that
I check my bees probably every 2 weeks, every other week during the summer.
When you say old, what is old for a queen?
3 years.
Yeah.
3 to 5 years.
Okay. And her minions, do they also have that long a life or are they shorter lived or longer?
No, much shorter, sadly. Yeah. Okay. So those bees, the turnover for those bees is a lot.
Yeah.
Drones, those are the male bees. They don't have a stinger and they get killed every fall.
Huh.
They're kind of useless. Okay. They mate with a queen from a different hive and that's pretty much their only job. And then the worker bees that are in there or any of the other female bees, they have lots of other jobs other than just being nurse bees, or they can live 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Not very long.
Over the winter, there are some that can live over the winter, and they don't go out during the winter. And so then as soon as spring comes or there's a first warm day, they kind of go outside the hive and die as new ones are emerging from the cells, replacing it.
Okay.
Replacing the ones that have died.
Do the cells stay, the hives stay the same size generally once they're established, once you have, you know, a certain number of bees, say 60,000 bees, do they continue to grow until they need to find a new home, or do they kind of find a happy number?
During the winter, they are much smaller, a tiny cluster, maybe just about the size of a softball, maybe a little smaller, clusters together with the queen, and they're keeping the hive at 95 degrees even in the coldest winter. They don't truly hibernate. They just kind of slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
And so their whole job is just to eat and live through the winter and keep the hive alive. And during the summer, as long as your hive is healthy, it's booming.
Huh. I have a friend who has a few hives, and they don't like the term beekeeper. They don't like to use the term beekeeper because of the idea that keeping sounds like you're holding the bees captive.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the word keeping also has, it's a synonym for caretaking as well. I'm wondering, how do you see your role with the bees? Are you their keeper, their caretaker?
You know, I teach beekeeping 101 classes, and the very last slide is a quote that explains that no matter what you do, nature is going to do its own thing. So I think I'm friends with a lot of very science-heavy beekeepers, and I was raised by some not science-heavy beekeepers at all. My grandpa was a science teacher, but as far as the beekeeping world, you're learning from them. They're going to do what they're going to do, and we're there to make sure that they're healthy and taken care of, but they know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's a, I don't know, partnership might be the wrong word, but it's something like that.
We're learning from them and we're taking care of them.
Husbandry.
Yeah.
Do you keep all of your hives in one location?
No, mine are at 3 separate locations.
And why would you do that?
You can get nectar or honey from different locations.
Okay.
I like to keep them spread out in case something happens at one of them.
Okay.
I have some at Angel Mounds and some at Thunderbolt Golf Course and some at my house, which is close to Elberfeld. And mine at my house close to Elberfeld are all in a tree line, and they don't love being in the shade. They like to be hotter. Mm-hmm. And I like having them there, though. So I guess that's more for a selfish reason. Thunderbolt Golf Course is a great place.
Where is that?
On the north side.
Okay.
On the north side and close to the airport, kind of. And so I like having them there. It's an easily accessible place. It's on flat ground, but sometimes it floods. Uh-huh. And so I have had to go out and move my hives. I've been in knee-high deep water at 11 o'clock at night after it flooded back there. And so, and Angel Mounds flood sometimes too. And so it's kind of safer to have them all spread out. The cool thing about honey and nectar, though, having them at different sources, is there are 300 known types of honey and nectar in North America alone.
Huh.
And they all have different flavors and right. colors and smells and all of that. And they can change the taste of food or things you eat them with, pairings.
Yeah, it would have been an interesting job to be part of that identification of all those different flavors and kinds of honey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm actually part of the Honey Sommeliers, and we give classes about pairings and things like that. That's now, a whole
is,
different realm.
This is a
realm.
New thing to me, Honey yeah. Sommeliers. Talk a little yeah. about that.
We talk about using the sensory analysis of honey. So the way honey looks, the way the mouthfeel is, the way it smells, all of those things to determine not only what foods it might be good with, you know, different cheeses or dark honeys used for a stronger flavor, things like that, but also determining what kind of nectar these bees are going to at what time in what location. Purdue is actually I'm working with Purdue on a project right now about collecting honey from different beekeepers across Indiana, and we're trying to, they're using scientific equipment to determine what kinds of nectar is used in these honeys and where from around the state at what time is blooming and why bees like to go to it at that certain time.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It's a far cry from my great-grandpa's start in the,
yes. Yeah. Yeah, that would be quite a spreadsheet, you know, to see all that data.
It's fun, all the different flavors and the things you can use it in.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned stinging when we were talking about getting suited up.
Mm-hmm.
Do honeybees have just a single sting, or can they sting more than once? And do honeybees die after they sting?
Okay. So honeybees have a barbed stinger. Okay. So it's kind of like a barbed fish hook. Uh-huh. If they sting you real good, it will stick in your skin. And as they fly away, it leaves their stinger in your skin, and on there you can see their actual venom sac pumping into, let's say it stings your hand, right. You can see their venom sac pumping into your hand. If they just kind of bump you with their stinger, it doesn't hurt nearly as bad. It's still going to itch. It's still going to swell. If you were allergic to honeybees, it will still affect you most likely, but that's called a micro sting. And there's a whole science of bee sting therapy.
Okay.
Which is a form of apitherapy, which is using beehive products or honeybee stings, venom itself, to benefit human health or animal health.
So they can sting and fly off to sting again?
If they don't sting you super hard.
Okay.
Yes. Now, if you're making them mad or if you step on them, they've stung you hard enough that they're going to die. Yeah.
Okay. Is stinging a means of communication with the bees?
It is. Yeah. They release a special smell from their body, and it kind of smells like banana Laffy Taffy. It's the same chemical makeup that's actually used in banana Laffy Taffy. And that smell, if you're in the hive and they make that angry smell, you know it's time to, maybe I should probably shut them up and move on to another
and
hive.
And it's noticeable to you? As
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. And it's that fake banana smell.
Yeah. Can you walk me through the process of collecting honey from a hive?
Yeah. So in late summer, I usually collect mine in the middle of July. This year has been kind of a weird weather year, so I have not collected much honey at all this year. But in late July, usually we will go around to the hives, me and my grandpa and my mom. We usually work together. And the top of the hive has frames in it, and they're like slices of the hive, basically. If you think about it being a file folder system,
sure.
You can pick up one of those file folders, and it's called a frame. And if it's completely capped over and full of honey, we move it to another box, another hive that's maybe in our truck bed, and we take that and all of the other ones that are perfectly covered back to my house, and we cut the little wax cappings off. We put it down into an extractor, which is a big drum, like a 55-gallon drum, basically, that has panels in it that spin those frames around and throw the honey out to the edges of the extractor using centrifugal force.
Sure.
And it drains by gravity. And I don't heat my honey. I do everything manually. So I even use a manual extractor. I don't use electricity to do any of it. And it gets gravity filtered through a screen. And we don't pressure filter it through a screen either. And collect it into a bucket. Make sure there's no legs or wings or any bad parts left in there. And then we put it into bottles. And I sell it.
That's a pretty low-tech process. It's involved. But
it is.
Yeah. Is there a reason that you don't heat or use any mechanical apparatus while you're doing the extraction?
Well, I don't use a mechanical apparatus because I still use the extractor that my grandpa used. And so I just kind of like the whole old-school family aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as heating it, though, whenever you heat your honey, it kind of gets rid of all of the good enzymes and all of the good stuff that's in honey. Otherwise, we may as well be eating corn syrup. There's a lot of good stuff in the honey, different vitamins and minerals that we're getting from honey, that it's not just a sweetener, but it also benefits our health.
Right. So I do know, and I might be jumping ahead in the conversation a little bit, but I do know that if your honey crystallizes, you can heat it gently in a pan of water to reliquefy your honey. But warming and heating, I mean, there are degrees.
If it's boiling water, you don't want to put your honey in it.
Okay.
Yeah, but low heating is fine. It's harder to control in a big 5-gallon bucket full of honey than it is personal use. But also, crystallized honey is delicious, just like it is. I know it's harder to get out of your container, and I hear that complaint a lot. But that is one way that you know that it is good quality honey from a beekeeper, is that it's crystallizing.
Yeah.
If you see brand name honey on your store shelves at Meijer or Schnucks or wherever, and it's not even just a little bit cloudy, odds are there's some corn syrup in it.
Okay. Well, that leads me to my next question, which was, you know, a few years ago, there was a lot in the news about fake honey. And it just came to the notice of the news. I mean, I'm sure it's always been an issue since there was a market for honey, an issue with adulterated products. And this particular period, there were reports coming out that as much as a quarter or more of what's marketed as quote-unquote pure honey has been adulterated with corn syrup or some other sweetener, some other product. And I'm wondering if there's a way, you just mentioned the one, noticing if there's a little bit of crystallization, if there's a way for like a normal person who's just buying some honey to detect before they taste it or even...
Meet your beekeeper. Talk to your beekeeper. Go to a farmer's market. If you're buying directly from your beekeeper, you know it's not adulterated honey because it all makes us mad that's allowed, basically. Yeah. It cheapens what we do. So go to a farmer's market and talk to your local beekeeper.
So of anything that you would find in the commercial market in a store, would you just simply avoid it all?
Personally, but that's easy coming from a beekeeper, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there are now a lot of local stores that are selling honey from a beekeeper. I know of about 3 off the top of my head that I know are actually beekeepers, other than myself, that sell around the Evansville area, sure, that do it all themselves, that are buying from. Well, I personally blend mine with other honey from beekeepers I know that don't want to go through all of the special steps with the health department, that are raising the bees themselves, that are extracting the honey themselves, that I go to and I check their honey, make sure that they know what they're doing. I know what they're treating their bees with. I know how they treat their bees. And then I buy up their honey from them. I blend it with my honey. And that's how I'm able to get bulk honey from them. And I only buy Indiana honey from beekeepers I know, like I said.
What is the process going through the health department to get your product onto the market?
So mine's a little different. I'm a honey wholesaler. So I have someone come from the health department every once in a while. His name's David. He's a super nice guy. And he checks to make sure that my labels are right, that they have the correct bottling date, that they have the correct weight on them. Honey is sold by weight, not volume. And my label where I'm extracting is also on my label to make sure it's not some imported honey like we were talking about earlier. He makes sure my bottles themselves are clean. He makes sure all of my extraction equipment, my bottling equipment, and everything is clean, that I'm using the correct kind of sanitizer that's a food-safe sanitizer on my equipment and my counters and all of the area where I'm actually bottling my honey. And then he checks off and makes sure that I'm continuing this list that he set before me.
Is this something that you can do out of your home?
I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
But for those others who you buy from who don't want to go through quite so extensive a process with the health department, they're able to sell their honey at a farm stand? Or
I believe there's now a special way in Indiana, you'll have to double check me, that has to do with cottage laws.
Okay.
And they are able to now.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of a niche, like I'm a wholesaler, and so I go through a totally different thing than they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the benefits of local honey. We mentioned it briefly. What makes it special?
Well, there's all the different flavors that I've told you about before. Right now, goldenrod is blooming, and goldenrod plants put off their own kind of honey that you either love or you don't love it. And so there's all of that. There's a whole world that's open to you once you find a honey you like. The flavor difference in when you start baking with honey or cooking with honey as opposed to sugar or corn syrup is wild. There's just the flavor profile is so much more. There's a deeper flavor. Not to mention all of the health benefits, the added vitamins and minerals you're getting from your honey. It's great for a cold. I don't know that I'm allowed to say that on record, but my kids don't ever use corn syrup. My kids don't ever use cough syrup. We always just give them a teaspoon of honey or a couple granules of pollen out of my beehive, and they're fine after a couple days. You can make cough drops out of honey that are a lot better for you than your normal cough drops.
Have you done that?
No, we just send them with a spoonful of honey and they're fine. Yeah. It's excellent for allergies too. If you have seasonal allergies, you can take honey to help you with your seasonal allergies, as long as it's with as long as your beekeeper has hives that are within 50 miles from where you live, that honey should be in the same agricultural zone to benefit your allergies.
Yeah, because they're drawing it from
the plants that you're allergic to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it true that honey keeps forever?
It is true. They found honey in Egyptian tombs that was still good.
Did they taste it?
I don't know. I don't know if I would. I get asked that question a lot. I don't know that I probably would. You know, if it's offered, why not? That's pretty cool.
So what's the difference between, I came across these terms, raw honey, filtered or unfiltered honey, processed honey, honey with some of the wax within it. What is the difference between the different ways you can buy honey?
Well, I always tell my customers, and when people ask me, if it was truly raw, truly unfiltered, truly not touched, you wouldn't want to eat it.
Okay.
So I also sell comb honey, and that is
the honeycomb. That was the word I was groping for there, yeah.
A literal slice of the honeycomb itself that has no eggs in it, no larva, no nothing. It's just honey. And we can check that with a light and make sure there's nothing wrong with it. That we just brush the bees off of it and put it in a box. And that is as raw, unfiltered as you can possibly get.
Otherwise, you're going to get legs and bits and
dead bees and all sorts of stuff you don't want to eat.
Put on your biscuit. Yeah. No, not so much that.
Yeah.
And processed honey would, I would imagine that would include a range of processing, including heat processing, but actually even just the mechanical stuff would be a means of processing.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You talked about all these variations that we see within a geographic area of the flavors and the colors of the honey. Can beekeepers control for that, maybe by moving their hives into different areas?
You can, absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you're talking with your beekeeper and you know them personally, sometimes they will take their hive to pollinate a certain plant. Let's say the blueberry plants that are up north. I know some beekeepers that pollinate the blueberry fields in northern Indiana, and then they have blueberry honey. It does not taste like blueberries. It is not what you think it would taste like, but it's just a different flavor of the honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or there's watermelon blossom honey isn't super popular, even though we have watermelon fields around here. Mm-hmm. I don't use my bees for pollination like that necessarily. So I don't know exactly how moving them works, but I know it's a whole process. Okay. And avocado blossom honey, some of the beekeepers I know send their bees out west to pollinate avocados and almond blossoms, sure, and things like that. And those all have their own type of honey.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't mm-hmm. it? As part of the, what's that word, the terroir?
Terroir, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, brings us back to the sommelier idea of everything that grows on your land is going to be impacted in flavor and color and aroma by the land itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about bee pollen.
Okay. So we collect bee pollen. I have a special apparatus, basically, that hooks on the front of my hive. And honeybees have little pollen baskets on their legs. And it's basically just a little cup on the bottom of their leg or pocket on the bottom of their leg. And they fly around to these different flowers and they collect different kinds of pollen. They push the pollen down into their pollen basket and fly it back to the hive. As they fly into this apparatus, it's kind of like a comb on the front of it,
okay,
like a hair comb. Mm-hmm. And as they fly into the front of it, it knocks the pollen out of their pollen baskets and into a little holding area. Okay. We collect that and then dehydrate it and then put it in little jars or freeze it. That keeps it good even longer, fresher longer.
There are health properties to pollen, or people claim health properties.
Yeah.
With regard to pollen. Do you know of any of those?
I've started to take it every morning within the past 6 months. I've probably mm-hmm. been taking it. And it has added protein in it, all okay. sorts of B vitamins, and no pun intended.
Okay.
And I've read great things about people. I have people that buy it from me a quart at a time because their allergies are bad.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Because you're only supposed to take a little or use a little at a time.
I take two pretty big pinches every morning now. Mm-hmm. But what I tell people is that you start out with a couple granules. I'm not allowed to make false health claims about it. So start out with 3 or 4 granules. And this is only if you know that you do not have a true anaphylactic reaction to pollen. Start with a couple granules and work up to a teaspoon or 2 teaspoons, however much you feel like is beneficial to you.
Yeah. And do you put it into something?
I take it plain. And it's kind of, I make sure I drink something afterwards. But people make smoothies with it all the time. It's not very good if you put it in your oatmeal or something hot.
Mm.
And I have also had people tell me that it keeps them up at night because of all the B vitamins, B6, B12.
Huh.
People are getting shots for extra energy.
Okay. So when the bees return to the hive and they go through this little
contraption
that takes some of the pollen, mm-hmm. not all of the pollen, because the bees need the pollen for themselves as well. So, but you do harvest some of that.
I leave the pollen trap on for 3 days mm-hmm. and then I take it off for at least a week or two.
Okay.
And then I'll put the pollen trap back on.
Okay. So it's just a periodic
a
thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because they do need the pollen as a source of protein for themselves.
Sure. Bee bread.
Yes.
It goes into bee bread. Yes. You told a story on another podcast about losing all of your hives to mites after moving them here from another location.
Well, we moved. We lived in Tennessee and okay. I didn't have bees for about 4 years. Well, my husband was going to medical school in Tennessee mm-hmm. and there was way too much going on to take good care of my bees. But when I started having bees up here again, I did not treat them at all for any type of mite or anything. I didn't know. Before I had left, mm-hmm. I never treated my bees. They were healthy. They were thriving. No issues. And then we left for that 4 years. And when I came back and I started up these hives, they all died over the winter. And the only conclusion I can come to is varroa mites. That's a special mite we have to treat for. And I use something called formic acid. And it is considered an organic product because formic acid is naturally found in nature. And you lay it inside your hive and the bees don't love it, but it kills off the mites. And so
when you say you lay it inside your hive,
it's kind of like a patty. It's like a long patty thing.
Okay.
And you lay it inside your hive across the frames and Then you come back in 10 days and you lay another one on, and it has to be exactly 10 days to help break the brood cycle of the Varroa mite.
Can you see these mites?
You can.
Okay, so you would know when you had an infestation.
There are ways to check and make sure that your mite load is under a certain amount.
So it's a natural thing that's just
like
a bloom. It could take over.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Are there other things that threaten a beehive?
Well, there's always wild animals that threaten a beehive. If you heard about the bear that was in Elberfeld a couple years ago, that was actually at our house.
Mm.
The pictures that were floating around from the DNR, that bear was at our house. And it knocked over a few of my hives, did about $1,000 worth of damage. And one of those hives is still alive, and it is the angriest hive ever.
Well, who can blame them?
Yeah, right?
So bears go for...
Not the honey, actually. Right. Not like Winnie the Pooh, like we see in children's cartoons. But they go after the protein from the larva. So when they knock the hive over... I'm sure they love the honey, too.
Sure.
But they knock the hive over, and they're trying to scrape the larva out. It was really cool. One of my frames that had beeswax on it, he'd stepped right on it, and it had his paw print in the smashed honey, just like a perfect paw print. It was cool. Did I was still mad about it. But.
Yeah, right. Like a cast, though. You could, you could make a cast from from the print. And wow. Was it a big bear? I don't remember the story.
They all seem kind of big to me, right? It's not every day you see a bear here, so... And then there's skunks and raccoons, and all of those can do some damage. Mice, they'll get inside your beehives if your bees aren't super protective and make a little nest in the backside of your beehive.
Do they get along, or does it?
No, not really.
You don't want
those. It's pretty gross. No.
Okay. Yeah. It's
just like you don't want your mice around food, you don't want them in your beehive either.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're an educator, a bee educator as well. It's one of your roles. You were a honey judge at 4-H. Did you do that this year as well? Or I know you did it maybe 2 years ago, last year.
I judge 4-H honey, and then I also judge like adult classes of honey, too.
Okay. So tell me about being a honey judge. What do you look for?
Oh, it's a really fun part of what I get to do. I not only judge honey, but we judge beeswax candles, and we judge meads made with honey, and gift baskets that are made by beekeepers of honey goods. And honey cakes, and they're all judged on different things.
Oh, that sounds like a fun job.
One of the biggest honey shows in the world was this past January, and I got to be a part of that, and it was exhausting. But it was so cool to see these beekeepers bringing their best exhibits for display and to get our feedback on. But most of the time, the honey exhibits that we judged, it's judged not for the same things that you would buy your honey at the health food store for. We judge on clarity and cleanliness. We make sure there's no fingerprints on the jar. We make sure there's no smudges on your lids. There's no sticky fingerprints anywhere. Your label can't be on the jar itself. All of those things. So we don't know whose honey we're judging.
Right.
So it's unbiased.
Do you taste it when you're judging?
We do. Yeah.
Do you ever judge things that are made with the honey?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I got to judge part of one of the baking categories last year, and that was cool. Yeah.
What do people make?
We've seen some beautiful honey cupcakes, and so the whole point of those is to be able to taste the honey in it. It's kind of a challenge to figure out how to create this recipe that has a heavy honey flavor, but is still different enough and moist enough and has the right crumb and everything to it.
Are you a cook yourself?
I am, yeah.
Do you cook with honey?
All the time.
Okay.
I try to use it in everything other than sugar.
Do you have a favorite that you might share with us? Of what, you know, just, I know I'm putting you on the spot here because I didn't ask you in advance about bringing any kind of a recipe. But but if you're in your kitchen and you're just rattling around trying to figure out, you know, I don't know what to put on the chicken or...
Sure. Any honey soy sauce mixture with some garlic, marinate your chicken in it, cook it. Grill it, you know, make sure you grease whatever pan your grill top so that it doesn't stick because honey is super sticky, like we know. That's a good one. And I make my our family's bread every week. And so I always use honey instead of sugar in the bread that I make.
Sure. I used to make a whole wheat honey loaf that was just a favorite.
Yeah.
Just so good. You offer classes mm-hmm. and educational events. You sell your products. You have eggs from chickens. Do you have any classes going on later this year?
In November, I have a class at Oakland Library coming up, so stay tuned to their Facebook page or their website for more details.
Is this a class in beekeeping?
It's Beekeeping 101. Okay. Yes, so it's everything you need to know to get started with bees.
Lovely. And where can we find your products?
The closest to here is 6th and Zero downtown. She sells at Paradise Organics in Newburgh. The Milk and Honey Cafe in Mount Carmel sells it. There's about 15 stores in the area.
Okay. And they can find these. Is there a list of these somewhere that people?
My Facebook page.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Liquid Gold Honey.
Well, Kelsey, thank you so much for sharing so much bee knowledge with
Thanks.
Me today.
Yeah.
This has been enlightening and enjoyable. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Food From Here is sponsored by Swirka and More, hosting a Veterans Day celebration on Friday, November 1st, featuring a catered lunch and a musical performance by members of the Evansville Philharmonic. The event is free for veterans and one guest. Additional guests are $8 each. Reservation deadline is October 25th. Details available online at swirka.org on the special events page. You heard Kelsey mention her go-to honey and soy sauce marinade, which you can use on meats or vegetables. It's great on broccoli and carrots and green beans, wherever you might want a little sweetness and umami. You can drizzle it on a rice bowl or a noodle bowl, or brush it onto roasting meats in the last few minutes of their roasting time. I'll put a quick recipe in the show notes for reference, and you can take it from there. With respect to baking, lots of bakers like to look for ways to swap out granulated sugar and corn syrup in their recipes. And honey is often a good option. Just keep in mind that baking requires a little more precision to get that chemistry right. So you might have to experiment to get that perfect ratio of dry to liquid ingredients. Honey can be used one for one as a swap for corn syrup, but it does lend its own particular flavor. So when you're doing a liquid to liquid swap, you might want to try replacing, say, half of your corn syrup with honey rather than a full 100% replacement, so you can see if you like the results. To replace granulated or brown sugar, you might want to use a little bit less than a 1-to-1 ratio, since honey can be sweeter than either of those sugars. You also might need to adjust the amount of liquid in your recipe, depending on how much honey you're adding. If your recipe doesn't have added liquid, and lots of cookie recipes don't, you're probably okay with just swapping out the sweetener, but you'll want to lower the oven temperature by about 25 degrees so your cookies don't scorch. If this is all sounding a little complicated, you can look for tips on baking with honey online from trusted sources. My go-to is Serious Eats. I've included a link for one of their articles in the show notes. And one last note before we're done here. One place you don't want to replace corn syrup with honey is in candy making, because honey does not hold up to high heat, and you lose those enzymes and nutrients that make honey a better choice, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of the swap. With that said, go forth, have fun, let us know how you did. Next time on Food From Here, I sit down with Lisa Vaughn of Feed Evansville to learn more about the organization she started to help get food to those who need it. Join me in 2 weeks for that. Food From Here is produced by Tri-State Public Media, home of WNIN-FM and WNIN-PBS. Thanks to Swirka and More for their sponsorship, and to you, lovely listener, for your support of public media. I'm Peggy Pirro. Thanks for listening.